Very good evening, everyone. And my name is Adrian Watts, and I'd like to add my welcome to you this evening. We're going to have a look now at the real message of Christmas. And to help get us thinking, we're going to watch a short video. Well, that was the Sainsbury's Christmas advert, 2014. And it tells of a most extraordinary moment in modern history. By December 1914, World War I had raged for almost 5 months and had claimed nearly 1 million lives. Yet, letters and diaries from the Western Front describe how guns fell silent on Christmas Eve. And on Christmas Day, British and German soldiers laid down their arms and came together to share in the game of football. And the Sainsbury's advert tells this story. A story of sharing, the beauty of which is amplified by the fact that the two sides were enemies at war with each other. And it's a story that people love. The ad has been watched on YouTube by over 13.5 million people, or 13.5 million times. We do seem to be a people that love the beauty of sharing. But why? Why do we value sharing? Now, it's fascinating that Sainsbury's have based their advert on a historical story rather than, for example, John Lewis, who tend to base their adverts on fictional stories. And it's interesting because it's meant that Sainsbury's have had to highlight certain aspects of the Christmas truce at the expense of others. For example, one of the reasons for the Christmas truce was that it was seen as a good time for the burial of the dead bodies lying in no man's land, most of which had been victims of the previous week's attacks. One British officer's account of Christmas was this: "I won't describe the sights I saw, and which I shall never forget. We buried the dead as they were. Then back to the trenches, with the feeling of hatred growing stronger after what we'd just seen." The truce was an opportunity for each side to bury their dead. Another reason given for the truce was that because both sides were sort of so close to each other in entrenched positions, they just needed some relief. One lieutenant wrote of Christmas Day, "As I walked slowly back to our trenches, I thought of the Prime Minister's ruling about not sheathing the sword until the enemy be finally crushed. It's all very well for Englishmen living comfortably at home to talk like that. But when you're out here, you begin to realise that sustained hatred is impossible." The truce was an opportunity for relief and rest from the conflict. Yet, these are not the aspects of the story that featured in the advert. There was no mention of the need to bury the dead. There was no mention of the need for relief from hatred. The story focuses on the game of football that was shared between the Brits and the Germans. Why? And why do those of us who remember the Christmas truce from our studies at school remember, above all else, the sharing of the football game? Now, you don't have to read very much about the Christmas truce to discover that it was actually heavily criticised by military officials on both the British and the German side. So much so that orders were given to explicitly forbid fraternisation with the enemy in the future. Consider, for example, the following German order forbidding friendly relations with the enemy and threatening the direst consequences. Any attempt at fraternisation with the enemy, agreement not to fire, mutual visits, exchange of news, such as occurred last year at Christmas and New Year at several points on the Western Front, is strictly forbidden. This crime will be considered as verging on high treason. General HQ have issued instructions that fire will be opened on every man who leaves the trench and moves in the direction of the enemy without orders. The reason for such orders was obvious. Fraternisation destroys the offensive spirit. And the whole point of going to war is to beat the enemy and win. Going to war is about survival, and only the strongest survive. To fraternise with the enemy is to show weakness, and it will be the weakest who die. The strongest survive, the weakest die. And therefore, all resources should be put to winning the war and gaining victory. Sharing in a game of football in no man's land is the worst things to do. Yet we love it that they did. Why? It's interesting to learn that some used the truce to try and gain an advantage over the enemy. Another officer wrote, "My friend said he had a cigar with the best shot in the German army, who others said had killed more of us than any dozen others. But I know where his loophole is now and mean to down him tomorrow." Indeed, one spoof of the Sainsbury's advert has Jim been shot as his in the head as he climbs out of the trench. And as you read the letters and diaries, you find that not only did such shooting downs happen, but they were approved of. And so why not remake the ad? Only this time have Jim eating the chocolate bar, a bit like Popeye eats spinach, and then leading the men to victory over the Germans with the final caption, "Sainsbury's, supplying the fittest to survive." Why not? One surprising thing about the advert is that it doesn't make any mention of what Sainsbury's sells. Now, on the one hand, we all know what they sell. There's no need to make an advert that says, "Come to Sainsbury's and you can buy bread, you can buy milk, you can buy chicken." But you might expect them to advertise any Christmas deals like that they've got on, like the other supermarkets do. You know, bags of Sprouts, 2 for £3. That sort of thing. Yet they choose to make an advert where the only mention of an item that you can actually buy is the Sainsbury's chocolate bar. And even then, it's not for their own profit. On Black Friday this year, Amazon UK had their busiest day on record. Its website recorded orders for more than 5.5 million goods. That's about 64 items sold per second. You know, our appetite for buying is bigger than ever. And for that reason, you might expect Sainsbury's to make a different version of the ad. One that ended in, you know, a giant Christmas hamper arriving in the German trenches, full of goodies from Sainsbury's, with a tag saying, "To the Fritz, Happy Christmas, love the Tommies." But as you read the letters and diaries of the men that day, you learn that for many of them, the greatest memory was not the sharing of gifts, but of human contact, shaking the hand of the enemy. And we prefer that ad, the ad where they share singing carols together, the ad where they share a game of football together, and the ad where they share friendship together. Why? Well, I want to suggest to you tonight that the reason that we love sharing is because it reflects the nature of God. At the heart of the universe is a relational God. God's not an impersonal force like electricity. Neither is he a lonely figure wandering the universe. Rather, God exists as three persons: God the Father, God the Son, and God the Spirit. And because God is three persons, there is relationship between them. For all eternity, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit have enjoyed perfect relationship with one another. It's not a relationship where the Father is in conflict with the Son, or where the Son is in conflict with the Spirit. They're not taking pot shots at each other. They relate to each other in perfect harmony, sharing and enjoying one another from eternity past. The Christmas truce was a moment when humanity reflected God as he really is. It's when the beauty of the eternal relationships are reflected in human relationships that we go, wow. That's why the scene of sharing is so beautiful. The beauty we see in human sharing and enjoying one another is a reflection of the life of God. But that's not all. For God the Father sent God the Son into the world so that we could share in the life of God. And so you can see this for yourself. I'd like to read you a part of the Bible. It's taken from John's Gospel. John's Gospel is one of the four accounts that we have of the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. If you can see, the passage is printed for you on your service sheets. But I'll read it to you now. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. John is talking here about becoming a child of God. He's talking about what Christians call adoption. Adoption is the act where God takes people into his family and gives them the full rights of being his children. Now, the implications of this are immense, and we could talk about the personal security this brings. We could talk about how it brings a new perspective on life. But I want to focus on how it brings personal intimacy with God. Adoption means that people can share in the life of the Trinity. That through the Son, people can know God as Father. Adoption means that people can share and enjoy relationship with God. Now, to speak of adoption by God does assume that people are apart from God and need to be brought into relationship with God. Now, after all, you don't need to be adopted by God if you are already a child of God. And you see something of the problem at the end of sentence 10, where we're told that the world did not recognize him. The word world in John's Gospel typically refers not to a big place with loads of people in it, but to a bad place with a lot of bad people in it. According to John, the thing that characterizes the world is that it does not know God as he really is. Jesus was born into that world that rejected him and ultimately crucified him. A world that preferred lies and distortion about God and instead of truth. And it's from this world that God adopts a people for himself. One of the reasons that the sharing of friendship is so beautiful in the Sainsbury's ad is because it's amplified by the fact that the two sides are enemies, at war with each other. Well, how much more does the fact that the world is hostile to God amplify God's adopting love towards his people? God's loving adoption of his people, far from being an endorsement of them, is actually a testimony to the character of God. God's adopting love is astonishing, not because the world is so big, but because the world is so bad. And God's adopting love would lead to the Son laying down his life to die in the place of his people, so that all who believe in him would receive the forgiveness of sins and adoption to new life with God. Well, where does this leave us? The game of football in no man's land is very moving, but we struggle to give a reason why. If survival of the fittest is what life is all about, then it was a foolish move. If life is all about possessions, then the advert has missed the whole point, as there was no mention of product. So that, in the words of Alan Sugar, the production team should be told, "You're fired." Yet we love the sharing of relationship. And the only reason for sharing relationship is that it reflects God as he really is. Maybe you're here tonight and you'd like the opportunity to learn more about this God, to consider how it's only the God of the Bible who's able to provide a basis for the things that we and our families value. And let me finish by mentioning two things that you might be interested in. The first is a course that we're running called The God Who Makes Himself Known. Many of us have never read the Bible, and our knowledge of it is secondhand. The God Who Makes Himself Known is a course that explains what the Bible is about and will give you an opportunity to understand it for yourself. It's made up of 7 studies. In each study, we read a section of the Bible and then consider some related questions. And it's through understanding the Bible, God shows us who he is and tells us of his plan for the world. The God of the Bible is the God who makes himself known. This course will be running in the new year. If you'd like more details, then do speak to Tom or myself. The second thing you might be interested in is Trinity at 10:30. We meet every Sunday at 10:30 in the conference room upstairs on the 3rd floor. There's term cards on your tables that lets you know what we're looking at each week. And you, of course, you're welcome to any of these meetings.